see all the sacrifices of the Yemeni are wasted by countries, Arab countries, who are offering the land road to supply the Israelis with fruit and vegetable. So this contradiction that we see between the language used by the Islamic country and many Middle Eastern countries, and at the same time, they pretend to be more concerned when they're not lifting a finger, and they are they have no sensibility to the image of the children and the women begging in the street for food and killed in the street, cut in pieces by the murderer of the Israeli. Israel would have never dared to such an act had the Arabs been united.
Very well. We're going to have to leave it there. Journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnier joining us from Brussels, and attorney, activist, and political analyst Zakir Ahmad Mayet from Johannesburg. Gentlemen, thank you for contributing to our program, and thanks for staying with us on Spotlight. Bye-bye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with Ayah 35 to 37 of Surah Ali Imran, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dhurriyatan ba'dhuha min ba'din, wallahu samiyun alim. إذ قالت امرأة عمران رب إني نذرت لك ما في بطني محررا فتقبل مني إنك أنت السميع العليم. فلما وضعتها قالت رب إني وضعتها أنثى والله أعلم بما وضعت وليس الذكر كالأنثى وإني سميتها مريم وإني أعيذها بك وذريتها من الشيطان الرجيم. فتقبلها ربها بقبول حسن وأنبتها نباتا حسنا وكفلها زكريا كلما دخل عليها زكريا المحراب وجد عندها رزقا قال يا مريم أنى لك هذا قالت هو من عند الله إن الله يرزق من يشاء بغير حساب
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. When the wife of Imran said, My Lord, dedicate to you what is in my belly in consecration, accept it from me. Indeed, you are the All-Hearing, the All-Knowing. And when she bore her, she said, My Lord, I have borne a female child, and Allah knew better what she had borne. And the female is not like the male. I've named it Mary, and I commend her and her offspring to your care against evil of the outcast Satan. Thereupon her Lord accepted her with a gracious acceptance and made her grow up in a worthy fashion, and he charged Zechariah with her care. Whenever Zechariah visited her in the sanctuary, he would find provision with her. He said, O Mary, from where does this come for you? She said, It comes from Allah. Allah provides whomever He wishes without any reckoning.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
As the U.S. Israeli genocide in Gaza continues for the 163rd day, a fresh Israeli airstrike on Deir al-Balah kills at least 12 Palestinians. The World Health Organization warns that Israel's looming ground assault on Rafah will lead to more Palestinian deaths and suffering. And Niger's government ends its military cooperation agreements with the U.S., calling the accord illegal. Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Over 5 months into Israel's genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, the regime continues pounding the blockaded territory with indiscriminate airstrikes and artillery fire. The health ministry in Gaza says at least 63 people have been killed and 112 others wounded in the latest round of Israeli attacks. At least 12 were killed in an Israeli strike on a residential building in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. According to the ministry, Israel prevents medical teams from reaching victims who are still under the rubble. Meanwhile, Israeli jets continue bombing residential buildings across the coastal strip, including Gaza City. The suffering in Gaza is not limited to just being targeted by bombs. According to UNRWA, malnutrition and famine are striking northern Gaza and is now moving to southern areas. Since the onset of the Israeli war in early October, over 31,500 Palestinians have been killed, most of them women and children. The head of the World Health Organization calls on Israel not to launch a ground offensive on the southern Gaza city of Rafah, where 1.5 million displaced Palestinians have sought shelter. Tedros Ghebreyesus said the escalation of violence in Rafah will lead to many more deaths and suffering. He called on Israel to refrain from the attack in the name of humanity. Tedros added that people in Rafah are too fragile, hungry, and sick to be moved around. On Friday, the Israeli Prime Minister approved plans to assault Rafah despite increasing international calls to halt the military operations. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has appointed Mohammed Mostafa as the new Prime Minister of the Palestinian Authority. Now, Mostafa is a U.S.-educated economist. He is also a former senior World Bank official who has replaced Mohammed Shataya, who resigned 3 weeks ago, citing the emerging reality in the Gaza Strip. Our correspondent in Ramallah has interviewed some of the Palestinians who have described their views about the newly appointed prime minister. Let's see what they had to say.
We are all Palestinians and we are the sons of this country. Anyone who will be in charge of the government is supposed to respond to the demands and hopes of the people. So the issue of bringing some politician to impose policies won't be welcomed, because we Palestinians know very well what we want.
Almost 30 years, we've been waiting to have an independent state, but instead, we have only moved from a bad situation to a worse. If we get the chance to have an independent state, then we may witness better circumstances. Otherwise, we don't need any governments, and let's return to the situation before 1987, before the first Intifada. Because literally, we are held in a big prison divided into cantons.
We're really frustrated. We don't expect that there will be any true change. What we are witnessing is a change of the names. There was Dr. Hamdallah, and then Shataya came. But nothing really has changed except for the politicians in charge. I don't think the coming cabinets will be able to rebuild Gaza. It's not easy. We have no trust in any Arab official, whether here or from the Arab countries. Since what happened in Gaza, we have lost hope and confidence in everyone.
To be honest, the majority of people here don't know Mohammed Mustafa, but it's said that he is a man with great capabilities. We hope he'll be able to form a new government and succeed in choosing his ministers. The most important thing for us is to change the current situation in every possible aspect.
We are in a very tragic and very difficult situation, and the tasks that are assigned to the new prime minister are not easy. So if he is not able to mobilize the countries all over the world to stand with us, then people are going to completely lose their trust in the government.
The Israeli regime has carried out fresh raids in several Palestinian areas in the occupied West Bank. The regime forces arrested a number of Palestinians during their operations. Mona Kandil joined us earlier from Ramallah for more details on the latest raids.
The Israeli forces this morning had raided the town of Ya'bad, South Jenin, and arrested a Palestinian who had been shot and wounded by the Israeli forces several days ago. The Israeli troops also stormed Nablus and mainly the old town of Nablus. For several hours, exchange of fire had taken place between members of the resistance groups and the Israeli forces. Later, the Palestinian Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, the armed wing of Fatah Movement, issued a statement saying that their members and their fighters clashed with the Israeli forces, and the members succeeded to detonate explosive devices Israeli military vehicles that stormed the old town of Nablus. In the town of Betunia, west Ramallah, the Israeli forces stormed this town, and they stormed a number of Palestinian homes there, and a number of Palestinians had been detained from Betunia as well. In Qalqilia, this time the Israelis have stormed the town of Nabi Elias, and they set up a military checkpoint, an additional checkpoint at the entrance of Nabi Elias in Qalqilia, and arrested at least one Palestinian when he was passing through the military checkpoint to enter Nabi Elias town. In Hatan, West Beit Lahem, the Israeli forces have also stormed this town, and we have to mention that the Israeli have raided the old town of Al-Khalil, the occupied West Bank, and they arrested four Palestinians, the grandfather, his son, and two of his grandchildren.
On to other news. We go to the ceasefire proposal that has been put forward by the senior leader of the Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas. He says that the group is waiting for a response to a ceasefire proposal from Israel and the U.S., the regime's main accomplice in the Gaza genocide. Osama Hamdan said the initiative put forward by Hamas is a realistic one with clear details. He said that it provides for a swap of captives in Gaza and Palestinian abductees and the withdrawal of Israeli forces from Gaza. Hamdan said the Palestinian movement had, during negotiations, called for an end to the war, the return of refugees, the dispatch of aid to Gaza, and the start of the reconstruction of the Strip. Hamdan touched upon the divisions within the Israeli regime on the war, and added that Tel Aviv has achieved none of its declared objectives, despite the atrocities committed in Gaza. He said that Hamas has told intermediaries that acts of aggression against Gaza must stop. Israel's systematic torture and abusive treatment of Palestinian prisoners have claimed the life of another inmate. According to Palestinian officials, 26-year-old Juma Abu Ghanima died in an Israeli prison after suffering a serious health condition that required hospitalization. His death brings to 13 the number of prisoners who died in Israeli jails due to torture and medical negligence since October 7. In a statement, Palestinian Prisoners Society said Israel has significantly increased its torture and systematic medical negligence against Palestinian detainees in the past months. Israel keeps over 9,000 Palestinians in jails, many of them under the so-called administrative detention. The controversial and internationally condemned policy allows the regime to keep Palestinians behind bars for an indefinite period of time without trial. Thousands of Israelis have again rallied in Tel Aviv to protest against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu over his failure to secure the release of captives in Gaza. The protesters urged Netanyahu to resign and called for holding early elections. They vowed to continue their protests until all captives are released. Netanyahu has been in hot water over his handling of the Gaza war. Israel has so far failed to release any of the captives by military means. It has also failed to achieve any of its stated goals of the war. Israel has been the scene of anti-Netanyahu rallies for months. The Israeli premier is embroiled in a series of scandals. His charges, among others, include fraud and the breach of trust in three cases filed in 2019. Israeli warplanes have carried out fresh airstrikes on Syria, targeting Damascus countryside. According to the Syrian military, the missiles were launched from the direction of the occupied Golan Heights. Added that the country's air defenses intercepted and shut down some of the missiles. The offensive resulted in one soldier being injured and some material losses. The Israeli regime frequently targets the war-ravaged Arab country, particularly areas in and around Damascus. The Syrian government has, on numerous occasions, called on the UN to force the Israeli regime to stop its acts of aggression. Damascus says the assaults are in violation of international law and are aimed at propping up terrorists. A new pro-Palestine rally has been organized in Rome. This, as the Italian defense minister has confirmed, Rome's arms exports to Israel have continued, despite a block announced last year. Max Tivoli has more from Rome.
On Saturday, thousands of people joined a new rally in the Italian capital, organized, among the others, by the Movement of the Palestinian Students and the Association of the Palestinians in Italy. The initiative, dubbed Stop the Genocide, also saw the participation of high school students and families. People at the rally strongly condemned Italy's unwavering support to the Israeli regime.
Italy, that claims to be a democratic nation, is a country where the government goes against the people's will. Profits always come first, even when a genocide is taking place. I'm teaching my kids to never give up the fight and to never accept being submitted.
The Italian Defense Minister Guido Crosetto has recently said that Rome has continued to export arms to Israel despite assurances last year that the government was blocking such sales following Tel Aviv's invasion of the Gaza Strip. Some Italian media reports recently revealed that despite the Italian government's denials, the value of arms sales to Israel more than tripled in December 2023 compared with the same month in 2022. And December last year was the peak of Israeli bombardments on the Gaza Strip.
Western governments have been systematically supporting Zionism and Israel's criminal regime, notwithstanding the protests against Israel's crimes that have been taking place across the globe. Italy's support to Tel Aviv must stop once and for all.
A solution to the onslaught in Gaza could be found if the international community stopped militarily supporting Israel. Italy, on its side, has been actively arming Israel through companies such as Leonardo and others. If we don't make sure that the Palestinians' right to self-determination is protected, and nothing will ever change.
Earlier this week, more protests and initiatives in solidarity with the besieged Palestinians were held in several Italian cities, including Milan and Naples. Max Civili, Rome.
People across the world are continuing to display their support for the people in Gaza as the regime presses ahead with its genocide and the besieged strip. The German capital, Berlin, was the scene of one of the latest such demonstrations.
We are here to demonstrate for Palestine, and I think it's not only about Palestine here, it's also about showing our anger towards the German media and the German politicians, because they have a lot of power and they decided to take a side. And even they use sometimes some wars for a human crisis or something like this. I can't believe it. I have the feeling that it's just an empty wars.
The protesters demanded an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and the liberation of Palestine and the establishment of Al-Quds as its capital. They carried bloodstained small mock body bags in reference to the large number of children killed in Gaza. Protesters also held up pieces of bread to draw attention to the issue of starvation in the besieged strip. Pro-Palestine rallies have been intensifying across Europe despite attempts by the governments to crack down on the public demonstrations of support. Waving Palestinian flags, the demonstrators gathered at Vienna's city center. The demonstration was part of the Israeli apartheid week called by the BDS movement, which promotes boycotts against Israeli products and multinational companies linked to the regime. Protesters said taking part in the rally was their contribution to solidarity with Gaza. They said the European countries are complicit to the Israeli crimes. They also called for an immediate ceasefire and the delivery of humanitarian aid to the Gaza Strip. Israel's government says it has broken its military cooperation agreements with the United States, calling the accord illegal.
The U.S. presence on the territory of the Republic of Niger is illegal and violates all the constitutional and democratic rules which would require the sovereign people, in particular through its elected representatives, to be consulted on the installation of a foreign army on its territory.
Abdramane said the government revoked with immediate effect a military accord that allows military personnel and civilian staff from the U.S. Department of Defense on its soil. The declaration came just a day after a senior U.S. delegation left Niger, following a three-day visit to renew contact between the two countries. U.S. relations with Niger faces challenges after a military coup ousted the Western-backed president of the African country last year. However, the U.S. still stations some 1,000 troops in Niger at a desert drone base. Niger has previously severed military ties with its former colonizer, France. It forced French troops in the country to withdraw after nearly a decade. Voters across Russia are casting their ballots on the final day of a presidential election that is all but certain to extend President Vladimir Putin's rule by another 6 years. Voting took place at polling stations across Russia's 11 time zones, including online balloting in the regions that broke away from Ukraine and rejoined the Russian Federation. Around 114 million Russians are eligible to vote in this year's three-day election that will continue until Sunday. In the run-up to the vote, Putin boasted about battlefield successes in Ukraine, where the Russian troops have recently made gains. He also cited economic growth, saying the country's economy has proven to be resilient despite Western sanctions. Putin's victory appears highly probable, as none of the three other candidates in the race is a prominent challenger. The current election marks the eighth presidential election in Russia. This will be Putin's fifth term as president.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
On Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure, from wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before Thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with Thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to Thee, addressing myself to Thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to You for the hope of Your rewards. So, bless Muhammad, the best of Thy creation, the summoner to Thy truth. Exalt me with Thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with Thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but Thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely, Thou art the All-Forgiving, the All-Compassionate.
Ayahs, 30 days. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. A monotheist person not only reflects on the Quran, but also tries to explain the ayahs of this heavenly scripture to others and make them familiar with its teachings. explicating of the Quranic teachings, first of all, was the duty of the Prophet and his infallible successors. Every faithful too, according to the extent that they had learned from the Ahlul Bayt, embarked on this heavy duty. So the ulema, that is, Muslim scholars, took over this duty after the occultation of the 12th infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, and have seriously continued this job till the present day. Today, this duty has become highly important due to the broad assault of enemies against the beliefs of Islam and humanity. In the sixth episode of the Ramadan special series, we will touch upon ayahs 55 and 56 of Surah Ma'idah of the Noble Quran. These ayahs are about God-given authority and leadership among the faithful. Stay tuned, please. The blessed month of Ramadan is the month in which we feel the presence of God more in life. Human beings do not live alone in society. They are rather like a football team with certain laws and regulations. Everyone should be committed to these laws and regulations. These laws include what we eat, what we wear, when we sleep, and so on. All religions are such. For instance, if you are a member of Manchester City, you are not allowed to put on the clothes of Liverpool and vice versa. Once we embrace Islam, we cannot do whatever we like. This is true for a Christian, a Jew, a Buddhist, and followers of other creeds. If a member of a football team obeys the orders of the coach and the club, he will attain validity and respect. The same is true about religious laws and orders. For sure, a great team will gain great results if it has a competent and a skillful coach to lead it. The importance of coach or leader is so high that, according to the narrations, God is far glorious than leaving the earth without a leader, Imam. Now the question is that, who can be the leader? Different schools and faiths have answered this question differently. Some say that whoever owns more power deserves to be the leader and dominate over others. In other words, might is right. This is law of jungle. Others maintain that whoever is wiser and more prudent should be the leader. Still another group believes that whoever is accepted by people should rule over them as leader. But God says in Ayah 55 of Surah Ma'idah, your guardian is only Allah, his apostle, and the faithful who maintain the prayer and give the zakat while bowing down. The Ayah says that our guardian is Allah. Then it continues that the Prophet is Allah's representative on earth. But after him, guardianship of people is given to the faithful who maintain the prayer and give zakat, while even if they are bowing down in prayer. It wants to say that it is only the faithful who are concerned about the needs of the poor that deserve to be the leader and guardian of society. According to many exegetes of the Noble Quran, the faithful in this ayah refers to Imam Ali, peace upon him, who gave his ring to a beggar while bowing down in prayer. After specifying the guardian and leader in society, the next ayah, that is ayah 56 of Surah Ma'idah, says, and whoever takes for his guardians Allah, his apostle and the faithful should know that the confederates of Allah are indeed the victorious. This ayah demonstrates the course of ultimate victory and success, which is achieved through obeying Allah and whoever He determines. Allah, addressing the Prophet, says in ayah 31 of Surah Ali Imran, "Say, if you love Allah, then follow me. Allah will love you and forgive your sins, and Allah is all-forgiving, all-merciful." According to this ayah, acceptance of guardianship or velayat of the Prophet and obedience to him are the conditions for loving Allah. Man should know both the wali, that is the guardian, and his duty towards him. Of course, disobedience is accompanied with love. A person who accepts God-given authority and leadership of a guardian, an imam, will spend his whole life in the service of Islam, but just in the front that his imam tells him. In the time of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, two Muslims had a dispute. They went to the Prophet for judgment. When the Messenger of God issued the verdict, the one whom the verdict was against was upset. So God revealed ayah 65 of Surah Nisa. "But know, by your Lord, they will not believe until they make you a judge in their disputes. Then do not find within their hearts any dissent to your verdict and submit in full submission." Therefore, acceptance of velayat or God-given authority and imamat means to submit wholeheartedly. Surely, submission in heart needs reasonable and rational prelude. It is not compulsory. After the passing away of the Prophet, his infallible successors became the imams of the Ummah, one after the other, till the time of the 12th and last of them, Imam Mahdi, may God expedite his reappearance. But he is in occultation, and Muslims cannot enjoy him directly. So, in such conditions, who is the guardian and leader of Muslims? Has Allah left them on their own? Upon the start of the occultation of Imam Mahdi, he was in contact with people via special representatives. One of them asked the Imam the above-mentioned question. Imam Mahdi answered, "As for the new events and circumstances, refer to the narrators of our hadith, since they are my vicegerent to you, and I am Allah's vicegerent." The narrators of hadith mean those who enjoy high level of knowledge whereby they can differentiate between valid and fake hadith and are expert in deduction of laws from the ayahs of the Quran and the practice and statements of the Prophet and his infallible successors. Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, says, "Whoever among you narrates our hadith and looks at our halal, permitted deeds, and haram, forbidden deeds, and recognizes our laws, accept him as arbiter. Indeed, I ordain him as your ruler." Thus, Imam Mahdi calls on all his followers to refer to the just and pious jurisprudence which are manifested by sources of emulation, maraje, especially in the form of velayat faqih, authority of jurisprudence. The Iranian people accepted Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, as wali faqih, jurisprudent with God-given authority, and obeyed his commands as the commands of Imam Mahdi. This unified obedience yielded the sweet fruit of victory of the Islamic Revolution and has resulted in countless success ever since. The followers of Imam Khomeini obeyed him till the last drop of their blood. In February 1982, Hanzale Battalion was under siege of the Iraqi forces. The Iranian combatants resisted for 5 days without food and water. The RTO, that is radio telephone operator of the battalion, contacted with the great commander of the division, Haj Muhammad Ibrahim Hemmat, saying, "My wireless is running out of battery. The forces were martyred one by one. The Iraqis will come soon to shoot their coup de grace. I also bid farewell." Haj Hemmat said while crying, "Don't cut the contact. Say whatever you like." The RTO continued, "Give our greetings to Imam Khomeini and tell him quoting from us, just as you had ordered. We resisted like Hussein. We stayed and fought till the end."
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Hola, soy Daniel Jadwe.
I am Daniel Jadwe, a citizen of Chile, originally from Palestine, born like so many other Palestinians around the world in the diaspora. Chile has one of the largest communities outside the Arab world. It is said that we are close to 300,000, but we are millions spread across the face of the earth, far from our homeland, but committed to the identity, history and struggle of our people, of our land, which is and will forever be Palestine.
Hola a todos y a todas. Marhaba.
Hello everyone. Marhaba. The Palestinians do not own Palestine. They have belonged to that land for thousands of years. They have been there since before the first invader arrived, and they will surely be there in the same place when the last one leaves. In more than 3,000 years of history, there have only been about 200 years of true peace in Palestine. And Palestine, because of its geopolitical and geostrategical significance, has always been the center of a dispute for world hegemonies. This land creates connections between Africa, Asia, and Europe.
Al ser el punto de contacto entre África, Asia y Europa.
The terrorism that Palestine suffers today is undoubtedly endorsed by the international community, which has completely failed in the objectives of maintaining peace and avoiding a new genocide.
Como dice el secretario general.
As the Secretary General of the United Nations says, what is happening today in Palestine is unprecedented, not only during his mandate, but throughout the entire history of the UN. The international community has completely failed, and international law, both human rights and international humanitarian law, have simply become a resounding ridicule in the face of the thousands of lives that are being slaughtered today. They are facing genocide by Israel's policy of political and physical extermination of the Palestinian people. Let's take a look at this report by journalist Huda Eghazi, who will give us more information about this absolute failure of the international community.
The UN General Assembly has called for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in the Palestinian territory of the Gaza Strip. The gesture takes place while, due to the United States' veto, the Security Council has not adopted any resolution in favor of truce. The text of the General Assembly resolution has enjoyed the support of the overwhelming majority of the international community.
The United States is deciding the course of the lives of all Gazans when it uses its veto power. Therefore, it is complicit in the crimes that Israel is committing against the people of the Gaza Strip. using the veto to reject the call for a ceasefire, which is asked by almost all of the world countries, means condemning an entire people in general.
Despite the ongoing genocide against the Palestinian people that began on October 7, 2023, and the murder of thousands of civilians, most of them women and children, the Security Council has failed to adopt a resolution calling for a ceasefire. Many countries and human rights organizations have lamented the failure of this entity.
All decisions that have been made by the UN Security Council and the United Nations are under the direct influence of the United States, since Washington has the final say. No one can make any decision without being approved by the United States, since it controls the entity. Many states in the international community support Israel, except for a few like the Islamic Republic of Iran, Venezuela, and etc. But in general, many states, including Arab ones, support Israel. The Arab states of the Persian Gulf also support Israel.
It seems that Israel is not satisfied with the demolition of Gaza homes, infrastructure, and killing of civilians. Images have recently emerged of Palestinians being detained by the occupation army, being forced to strip to their underwear, kneeling on the ground, blindfolded, and held in inhumane conditions. These images have provoked outrage among civil society in different corners of the world.
The Israel army does not differentiate between children, civilians, and the elderly, especially in the northern area of Gaza. They enter any place they want and arrest whoever they want, even arresting children under 15 years of age without any fault, even committing violent acts against them. This is a criminal act. There is no country in the world that has done what the regime of Israel has committed. Look what happened between Russia and Ukraine. Everyone came out in protest to stop the war. The war that Israel is waging against Gaza is more criminal than what the Nazis did in Germany. What Israel does is a crime, and it is not justifiable.
It is not justifiable.
The Hamas resistance movement accused Israel in a statement of kidnapping and murdering innocent civilians, describing it as a reprehensible crime, and insisted on human rights organizations to intervene. Despite all the crimes that Israel is committing against the civilian population in the Gaza Strip, the international community, especially the West, continues to fail to react to this ongoing genocide. This shows how the United States, the main sponsor of Tel Aviv, has become complicit in atrocities against the nation. Hoda Hejazi, Gaza, Palestine.
Sin duda que las víctimas del Holocausto nazi.
No doubt the victim of the Nazi Holocaust would roll in their graves if they could see what their descendants are capable of doing to the Palestinian people today. We thank Huda for this interesting report and greet Jorge Ramos Tolosa, PhD in history, a professor specialized in the contemporary and recent history of Palestine at the University of Germany. Thank you, Jorge, for being with us. A hug and welcome. I want to ask you two questions that everyone should be asking. Zionism has said time and again that Palestine belongs to them. You could first tell us who lived in Palestine before the creation of the regime of Israel and what role the Western powers played in the creation of Israel.
En la creación del Estado de Israel en la tierra de los palestinos?
Sí, claro. Bueno, lo primero, muchísimas gracias por invitarme. Es un...
Yes, of course. First of all, thank you very much for inviting me. It is a pleasure to be here with you. I think it is a fundamental question, Daniel, to address any issue related to Palestine. I think it is essential to understand that for more than a millennium, for more than 1,000 years, Palestine has been a very diverse territory in which Jewish people, Christian people, Muslim people, people from other minorities of any kind have lived following their own religions. And it all begins not 2,000 years ago. The question of Palestine does not go back to 2,000 years. It is not a religious issue, although we are talking about the Holy Land, obviously, and there are different actors who use religion as a legitimizing element and as a mobilizing element. And Zionism itself, although in the beginning the majority of Zionists did not believe in God, and yet they did believe that God has given them the earth. So this is essential. We're talking about a colonial issue, specifically settler colonialism that began at the end of the 19th century when this Zionist movement, which did not represent Judaism, nor was it a branch of Judaism. Neither Zionism nor the regime of Israel represent Judaism, nor are they branches of Judaism, but they do speak in its name. But it has precisely become a Zionist movement. And if we review contemporary Jewish history, we see that there have been and currently exist numerous people and numerous Jewish groups that are clearly anti-Zionist, both from religious Jewish identities and from cultural Jewish identities or by family heritage. So of course in Palestine, as they say, when Zionism emerged at the end of the 19th century, there were no problems between the Jewish, Christian and Muslim communities. By the way, they all spoke Arabic. They were all Arabs. It is a criterion above all linguistic cultural criteria. And they lived together in a territory that belonged to the Ottoman Empire. And of course, it was the arrival of a European settlement colonialism movement that drew on European Judeophobic racism and that basically accepted the racist anti-Jewish idea that Jewish people could not live in Europe, which triggered the colonialization of Palestine. The problems created by these hegemonies we are seeing to this day. And of course, this Zionist movement had at its center and continues to have at its center the regime of Israel, obtaining the maximum possible territory with a minimum native population, with a minimum non-Jewish population. So, of course, how to achieve this? This is a question. At the end of the 19th century, there were 85 to 86% of the Palestinian population that was Muslim, 10 to 11% of the population that was Christian, and less than 5% that were Jewish. Now, how can one accept that a territory with less than 5% Jewish demographic becomes exclusively or mostly Jewish, as Zionism intended? Of course, history is never written, nor is it linear, but obviously, this Zionist objective could hardly be achieved without massively expelling or discriminating and segregating the native Palestinian population. We call this apartheid. Then in 1948, the regime of Israel was created. The Zionist movement had a fundamental triumph, but its objective of expanding over the maximum possible territory with the minimum Palestinian population did not end there. But 75 years later, it is still continues and it is still underway.
We're going to have the audience ask you two questions so that we can also answer the doubts they have. Who would like to ask Jorge? Please.
Hola. Mi nombre es Dante Olate.
Hello, my name is Dante Olate. I'm a student, and I wanted to ask what the Sykes-Picot Agreement is, what this treaty consists of, and how it affected the fate of Palestine.
¿Y cómo afectó el destino de Palestina?
Muy bien. Muchas gracias por tu pregunta, Dante.
Very good. Thank you very much for your question, Dante. Of course, it is essential to understand that the Zionist movement began the colonization of Palestine at the end of the 19th century when Palestine was an undifferentiated entity that was part of the Ottoman Sultanate. And one of its main purposes was to gain the support of a great power because, of course, it was a movement of settler colonialism. The Zionist movement was not directed solely by a state, nor was it a company of a state, as was the case with the British East India Company or the Dutch. So it was essential to get the support of a great power. So in the context of the First World War, where the Sykes-Picot Agreement that you mentioned happened, we must take into account that the United Kingdom was the most important imperial power of the time. Following the outbreak of the First World War, one of its enemies was the Ottoman Sultanate. With regard to the strategic position that Palestine had in the Eastern Mediterranean, almost at a crossroads between Africa, Asia, and Europe, it could be the ideal place for creating an ally for future, a puppet state, or a geopolitical platform that served their interests or was linked to their interests.
política que sirviese sus intereses o que estuviese.
But then of course here also the second great imperial power of the time, which was France, was interested in the fact that if the Ottoman Sultan was defeated, it could gain some profits from the remains of the numerous territories of the Ottoman Sultanate. France and the United Kingdom were seeking territorial advantages and acquiring those territories, and in fact, they were thinking how to manage to colonize those territories after the Ottoman Sultanate was defeated. And so it happened. Secretly, in the spring of 1916, Mark Sykes and Francois Georges Picot, British and French delegates respectively, signed secret agreements, the Sykes-Picot agreements, by which they divided a large part of the territory of the Ottoman Sultanate, and it finally happened. In case the Ottoman Sultanate lost the First World War, the disintegration and end of this empire was forced. So it is essential to understand that these agreements, which were, by the way, revealed by the Bolshevik revolutionary forces in November 1917, a little more than a year after their signing and a few weeks after the revolution of October 1917, of course, these agreements were fundamental for future. The distribution of the map of the Eastern Mediterranean of Southwest Asia, this is essential. And furthermore, they were hand in hand with the famous Balfour Declaration. In the Balfour Declaration of November 1917, what Zionism had been seeking for long happened for the first time. For the first time, the United Kingdom stated in a letter that it was going to support the creation of a Jewish national home, which everyone understood to be a state that the Zionist movement sought. And then, although there were ambiguous and ambivalent formulas, effectively, this declaration came while the British troops arrived in Palestine and stayed there with the aim of incorporating Palestine into the British Empire in the following years. The British forces, which were in Palestine since 1917, after the British Mandate of Palestine became effective, they abandoned Palestine in 1948, and the ethnic cleansing of Palestine and the creation of the State of Israel began. At this time, the United Kingdom fully supported the Zionist movement. And in fact, we still see many borders in the Eastern Mediterranean and Southwest Asia that correspond to this era, right? The United Kingdom was left with the administration of Palestine and Jordan, Iraq and France, with Syria and Lebanon, and they were British and French colonies, respectively, for several decades until they achieved their independence. But the case of Palestine is special. It has been different and continues to be different precisely because of this movement of colonialism. The United Kingdom was the only settlement that was already there from previous decades, which was Zionism and achieved the creation of the regime of Israel through ethnic cleansing in 1948. A través de la limpieza étnica en 1948.
Muchas gracias, Jorge, por...
Thank you very much, Jorge, for your presence on our program. I give you a hug from here, and I hope to be able to contact you again in the future. Thank you so much.
Also a pleasure. Thank you very much to you.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be back. Well, we are back, and we want to talk about another one of the main victims of this historic Palestinian aggression. We're going to talk about culture, and for that, we have invited Andrea Giadach, Chilean actress, playwright, theater director of Palestinian origin, but also someone who has worked for a long time in the field of culture, fundamentally rescuing traditions, reconstructing her own identity.
Andrea Giadach is a playwright, director, actress, and member of the Artists for Palestine NGO. Her works are recognized everywhere and among her peers. She has worked on topics such as the loss of the homeland, identity, and reconstruction, among others. As the granddaughter of Palestinian migrants, her story and her vocation have been crossed by the diaspora and by the link with artistic communities in the occupied territories of Palestine.
One of her most notable works is Mi Mundo Patria, which is Scenic Heritage. Together with Alejandra Diaz, an actress of Jewish origin, they founded the Natuf Collective, made of Chileans of Palestine and Jewish origin, and whose main work is El Circulo, which seeks to remove views regarding antagonists and the possibility of relating honestly without denialism and trying to see the other reality.
Hi, Andrea. How are you? Thank you very much for coming and for accepting this invitation. I always start by asking, when and why did your family arrive in Chile?
Well, thanks, Daniel, for the invitation. Indeed, my family arrived at the beginning of the 20th century because of the Turks, the Ottoman Turks, who were in the entire Levant area as well. We were in Palestine when Palestine was still Palestine, because there was a multicultural space there. They took the Christians as soldiers and used them as cannon fodder. So many Palestinians at that time came to Chile and formed a large community, among them my grandfather. That's how they arrived here, more or less. I could go on, but we can talk about so many things today.
Oh, no, it's okay. Well, this actually was because of a change that occurred in 1898 on the part of the Turkish Sultan, because with the emergence of national states and the loss of the religious character of the Empire of States, the prohibition on both Jews and Christians was lifted to participate in the war defending the empire against the West. And when this happens, they actually begin to take everyone to the army, especially the firstborn, Jews and Christians, and that is why there was a very strong immigration from this entire area, and that defines their diaspora in Chile and throughout the world of a great Christian community. In Latin America, the countries that have this Christian community are fundamentally Honduras, El Salvador, and Chile, which is where the Palestinians of that group have settled. Now, you are third generation, aren't you?
Yes, I am the third generation.
Did your parents always raise you as a Palestinian?
¿Cómo Palestina?
Mi padre, sobre todo, me crió como Palestina.
My father, above all, raised me as a Palestinian, but more than as a Palestinian, under the consciousness of a Palestinian-ness. And I also believe that he is to blame for me being a Palestinian activist, because I am not aware of when I started to become active, given my father always taught me about and showed me Zionist and anti-Arab propaganda. Since I was little, he showed me the movies, how the Arabs were portrayed as the bad guys among other people, among the Russians, etc. But well, he always made me very alert in relation to media propaganda and how the media continues to this day, right? We can see it. They are absolutely taken over by Zionism.
Hasta el día de hoy, ¿verdad? Lo podemos ver, están tomados absolutamente por el sionismo.
A ver, yo tengo un poco una respuesta.
Let's see. I kind of have an answer that you just said you don't have. I'll try it. Because you say, I don't really know when I became an activist, and I feel that you become an activist when you find your place in the world. You found your place in the world of theater, in the world of theatrical creation, true? And I remember since we knew each other, which are many more years than we would like to admit to, right? From your first steps after leaving theater school, you started creating theater around Palestine. I remember very well the first work I saw of your own creation. It was Mi Mundo Patria, right? Which told the story of Fada Wabe, a Palestinian immigrant, and from then on, I remind you, always linked to theatrical creation around Palestine first, and around the recovery of peaceful coexistence later. Tell us a little bit about that.
Cuéntanos un poco de aquello.
Sí, bueno, efectivamente, Mi Mundo Patria.
Yes, well, indeed, Mi Mundo Patria, my homeland, as you say, makes me an activist. But Mi Mundo Patria also makes me a director and playwright. And that is because of a deep need that Lorena Ramirez Alamo had. She was my partner with whom we made this creation. And of course, my own need, a common need, to make known the reality of Palestine. Since I was little, since I was in school, I talked about Palestine, and they seemed to look at you as if you're against the Jews and poor Jews who were in the Holocaust. That was the story only. I say, well, how should we talk about Palestine in a way that we can really attract people? So what I did was take certain relevant episodes, which is the loss of homeland and childhood in three people of different nationalities, origins, or identities. And among those people was Fouad Dawawi. I took testimony, Dramaturgy Network, and that is the result of my homeland, which was incredible. It took place for years, and it is scenic heritage today.
We're still giving it. In fact, we saw it recently, right?
Yes, yes. And then I take on the challenge of creating a work from the antagonistic look. What's that? We met Chilean Jews and Palestinians. I proposed to them, well, the only thing I can propose here is that we go as far as we can. And I invite you to generate or establish a dialogue to see how far we can turn our look. We can see others in that way. We're always talking about hegemonic stories and other stories, macro stories, right? But we had micro stories based on a question, which was, to what extent do we generate otherness for fear of rejection from the community itself? The result was incredible. We presented this worm for many times, and recently we had a circulation in three regions of Chile in the south. And not only were the Jews and the Palestinians affected by this work, but many Chilean people said, this work is very necessary because we are increasingly polarized. Of course, the Palestinian reality is so absolute that it always goes on, and if there is someone who dares to look, there is no turning back.
Andrea, I want to thank you for this interesting interview, and of course, we are going to continue seeing each other, and I will undoubtedly be in this new work that you are preparing. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. See you in the next chapter.
Muchas gracias. Nos vemos en el próximo capítulo.
In the limelight.
The Zionist regime has seriously hindered the work of humanitarian agencies by blocking aid, targeting and killing humanitarian workers, destroying Palestinian food production, and cutting off Gaza's north, reducing Palestinians there to eating animal feed, bird seed, and leaves, unfit for human consumption. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, the Zionist